From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the third day of April 2018. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist. He'll help us review what took place last Thursday when the United States Department of Agriculture released the grain stocks and acreage reports. He'll take those and put them in context of the whole of the growing season. Speaking of which, we'll take a look into the production side of the growing season as well. Emerson Nafziger will be here, agronomist from the U of I, as well weed scientist Aaron Hager. Aaron in particular will take up dicamba and what he sees as its proper use during the growing season on dicamba-resistant soybeans. Stay with us for this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Todd Hubbs, agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. Todd, thanks for being with us. Last week, USDA on Thursday released a couple of reports, the grain stocks numbers and the acreage figures. The acreage figures really challenged what the trade was considering would happen this year by dropping not only the corn number, but also the soybean number. The trade was off by 1 million acres on the corn, 2 million acres on the soybeans. These are both much smaller figures than anybody was expecting.
Yeah, they are. The corn acreage wasn't what I would call a shock. The soybean acreage to me was a real big shocker. Based on the profitability, you would have expected, I think, in a lot of the Corn Belt states, an expansion of soybean acreage. And that just didn't happen in the prospective plantings report. The miss by the trade, I missed it. A lot of people missed it. Was substantial, over 2 million acres on soybeans at 89 million acres. The corn acreage was in the low end of the trade range, so it wasn't completely outside the range, but it was still low. And it's sort of understandable when you think where corn prices have been and their relative profitability to soybeans that we would see these acreage shifts in large portions of the country away from corn and into spring wheat, cotton, cotton and soybeans. But we didn't see the shift in soybeans that we expected. So it was a shock, and the prices showed that shock in the market on Friday.
Now, the Western Corn Belt in particular for soybeans, plus Ohio, changed things dramatically. Iowa down, 200,000 acres. Minnesota down 250,000 acres. Nebraska down 200,000 acres. And Ohio was down 250,000 acres. Those are big changes in soybeans.
They are. And in some of those states, you saw corn acreage reduced as well. Not in Iowa, but basically in large sections of the Corn Belt, the acreage and principal crops planted, this is a large swath of crops, went down. Iowa's lower, Nebraska's lower, Kansas is lower, Illinois and Indiana and Ohio and Minnesota, all lower in principal crops across the board. So it was a combination of, in the report, people just planting fewer acres of crops. And when you broke down the distribution across different crops, corn suffered, but soybeans didn't have the response we would expect. The spring wheat acreage number was huge. It was well outside the trade estimate too, at 1.6 million above last year. And most of that was in North Dakota and Minnesota. So, we got this strange, I wouldn't say strange, but when we think about the portfolio of crops we could have planted this spring, overall, we shrunk the pie a little bit and we planted other crops, basically, in a lot of large parts of the country.
Yeah, about 500,000 acres lower in corn for Minnesota. That was just a huge drop. But again, they apparently are going to put spring wheat in.
Apparently. Based on the weather we're having this spring, I don't think anybody's planting anything at this point in time. And yeah, that's something to look forward to as we move through the next few months, because if we can't get, spring wheat and corn planted in a timely manner, will we see people shift over to soybean acreage? Is there this possibility that when we finally get the June acreage report, that soybean number grows a little bit? or will we get those acreage numbers in for corn and spring wheat? It's a big question, I think, as we move through the next 3 months.
Do you think very much about why this change took place in the Western Corn Belt? Was it just natural crop rotation? Were there other reasons behind it? Have you been able to discern or at least consider what it meant?
I think some of it was just it's time to rotate back to wheat in a lot of places. And just the general profitability level. And when you think about the basis spreads in the Western Corn Belt for large chunks of the marketing year, where we saw soybean basis was outrageously large in the spread, and corn prices have been depressed across the board. So the idea that people are moving or taking acreage out of these crops on a profitability basis makes sense to me. I just didn't think we would see that kind of principal acreage loss in total. I mean, in the United States, we're planting basically 1.16 million acres less in principal crops than we did last year. And 3.3 million of that's corn and soybeans lower. And we got an expansion in things like spring wheat, cotton, and rice nationally. So when we think about the portfolio across the country, the takeaway, the reduction in corn and soybean acres, the magnitude of that was much larger than I thought it would be.
USDA was around, 90 million of each in its ag form. We're below that at 88 million for corn, 89 million roughly for soybeans. Does it lift the whole of the commodity sector in price?
Right now, you're seeing the lift occur in a lot of ways. You have to take it back to what kind of demand scenario we're seeing basically in both corn and soybeans and across the feed grain scope. Spring wheat prices have taken a hit on this acreage number. We're seeing problems in the hard red winter wheat area. You know, they've had a drought, now it's cold. You're starting to wonder what's going to happen to those acres as we move through the next couple of months. So a general lift, I think, can you say across the commodity sector? Yeah, maybe a little bit of lift. Some pressure maybe on some livestock prices, but with these higher feed costs, that looks like shaping up with lower acreage. In particular with corn and soybeans, however, what we've seen in soybeans, we're not getting the kind of demand that I would like us to have in the export market. We had another export inspection report this morning. They put out 19 million bushels exported for the previous week. You know, we're starting that slowdown that we normally see in April for soybean exports, and we're not to the level of USDA's projection right now. So the idea that that number could decrease further and increase ending stocks in 17-18 marketing year is a distinct possibility. Hopefully we can see crush pick up some of that slack as we see soybean meal prices the way they are. But I don't think it can pick up all that slack that we see in export markets. Even though the soybean planted acreage number out of the report was lower than the trade expected, it's still 89 million acres of soybeans on top of what may be growing ending stocks in the 17-18 marketing year. So when we think about prices in the soybean complex, or soybean prices in particular, I'm of the opinion you need to sort of start thinking about, still think about marketing new crop soybeans, you know, and old crop soybeans at these elevated prices out of this report, because there may be pressure coming. I know we're seeing problems in Argentina, severe problems. They're going to look like they're going to lose 17 to maybe 20 million metric tons. That's a huge hit. But the Brazilian crop's growing. It seems like it's getting bigger every time someone releases an estimate. Last year, they did a little over 114 million metric tons. Recent estimates have put it upwards of 117, 118 million metric tons. So, in all, we're looking at maybe about a 15 million metric ton decrease out of those two countries, which is a lot of beans. But they carried in a lot, and Brazil's the main exporter. Argentina's the crusher, right? So how do we compete with Brazil and their large soybean crop and stocks that they carried in from last year? So when we look at soybean prices, I still feel like there's a place to think about marketing the new crop, especially if you can get a well above $10 cash price in the next few months as we move forward. Corn prices, you know, we've built a really strong demand in corn over the last year. We're seeing it across all use sectors. Exports are growing every week. The ethanol grind's still going strong. The feed and residual number coming out of the grain stocks report was a bit of a head scratcher. We could see some of that. We could lose maybe, I'd say USDA will probably fade at 70 to 80 million bushels in their next report. But we could see that come back as we move through the June stocks report and the final stocks report. But overall, you know, we're seeing really strong demand. And this lower acreage number and what is shaping up to be a real problem with planting this year. You know, if we get that corn crop in late, there's some real strong price signals starting to form in corn. So I'm sort of in a wait and see mode on new crop corn at this point. When we think about, you know, wheat prices, it's this combination of what's going to happen with spring wheat acreage and what ends up happening with the winter wheat acreage that's currently under a lot of stress. It's sort of looking like a little bit of a wash right now, but we're going to have to wait and see how that develops over the next couple of months. So is it a rising tide that lifts all boats? Right now it feels that way, but I'd keep in mind the supply and demand fundamentals that are shaping both the soybean and corn markets as we currently sit here.
Yeah, so to bottom line it, relatively speaking, the changes that took place by USDA last week don't really change the new crop ending stocks, though we don't have an official one from the United States Department of Agriculture, very much from this current marketing year to the next marketing year.
That's correct. I think, you know, if we plant 89 million acres and do just a trend yield of 48.5, that's what we tend to use for the expectations, you'd see maybe a slight decrease if we upped our exports year over year in 18-19, just a slight decrease in the ending stocks numbers. So, you know, as I look forward, I sort of see soybeans being sort of in a range-bound kind of scenario, maybe slightly lower price than we currently see. If we do a big production number in soybeans, you know, or if we increase acreage through the planting season, then that dynamic's going to change significantly. But I think at the current acreage right now, with the kind of demand structure we see moving forward, you know, there was a lot of fear of below $9 cash soybeans this year going into next year. You know, if that acreage sticks and the kind of demand we see, I think that's off the board, you know, getting below nine. But if we see an acreage increase or a real hit to demand through these trade fights that we're currently getting embroiled in, I'm sort of optimistic we might escape that somehow. Somehow we got to get out of that tit for tat thing, but, you know, then it's back. But the idea that you're going to see this huge run up in soybean prices, I think, is also a bit of a pie in the sky thought right now. Whereas with corn, you know, there's a lot of green lights in the corn market other than the feed and residual number, basically.
And ending stocks down as low as what? 1 point?
We do an estimate with our trend yield at 171.4. You know, you're looking at ending stocks number, or I'll just put it in stocks to use terms, about 10.7% if we see the kind of consumption we think we'll see, which is getting down near rationing level, right? So now, having said that, if we get a short crop and lower acres as we move in, I think you'll see some real price strength that will probably end up, you know, seeing demand ration back a little bit. We might not see the super, super strong numbers that we're currently projecting. But yeah, there's a lot of green lights in the corn market right now. The problem is we can't plant the stuff yet. And I mean, it snowed on Easter here in Illinois this week. And I mean, what are we looking at getting into the fields? May? At this point, it's really going to be a tough decision. You know, do you want to plant that corn late? Can you get it in as fast and as quick in the scenario you want? And will we see the acreage adjustment? I'm going to be paying attention to the crop progress reports and what we see moving forward for the next couple of months, because any kind of shift away from spring wheat and corn into soybeans or, you know, into any kind of other crop scenario, the idea that we could lose more corn acreage is nothing but a positive for corn prices at this point with the kind of demand we see.
Hey, Todd, thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
Todd Hubbs is an agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, specializing in commodity markets. You can find his thoughts on the markets each and every Monday, or most of them, at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now, if you'd like to hear this interview again, it's already posted to our website at willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. It's public radio for the farming world. Up next, we'll hear from Emerson Nafziger, agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. I asked him what he thought farmers should positively do this year as it relates to corn and soybean production.
We've looked at seeding rate for both corn and soybeans, and unlike some of the things you hear out there about soybeans, you know, 100,000 seeds or 110,000 seeds really is not enough. And our research showed that pretty clearly. So over the last 3 years, we've been doing trials with that. And we think that planting 140 to 150,000 seeds is just where people should be with that. And we also suggest people don't plant more with the idea that if they don't get quite as good emergence, then they'll still have enough stand to keep. We can't really be afford to be keeping stands of, you know, even if they're uniform and there's 50 or 60,000 seeds out there, we probably need to, or plants out there, we need to think about replanting. Corn, we did see some trials this last year where we needed 40,000 or maybe even slightly more than that to get to the highest yield. That's been fairly rare, actually. And if you look at an average over the work we've done in recent years, establishing 35 or 36,000 in our most productive fields is generally about where we're going to get maximum yields, or I should say optimum yields. We still need to pay for that seed. One thing that's gone is this danger of having too many plants such that the crop just deteriorates, you know, falls over, falls down, dries up, this kind of thing. The stress tolerance bred into hybrids today means that we can, you know, get to 40,000 or even 45,000 plants, they're not going to fall over or fall apart. The real danger of getting to those very high populations is that last 5 or 6 or 8,000 seeds didn't pay for themselves by increasing yield. And so we could be paying more for seed than we really should be paying. Other than that, we've looked at things like row spacing and you know, the usual agronomic things. I think all told that people that, you know, manage their crop in a very sort of middle of the road type of way probably are maximizing their returns at this point. Those that just feel that, you know, their secret is to use more than anybody else uses, say it be it nitrogen or seeds or anything, we don't have very good evidence that that's a paying proposition to do that.
That's Emerson Nafziger, an agronomist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. By the way, the Farm Dog Daily team has added the crop scientist here on campus to their regular rotation for release of their daily Farm Dog Daily post. You can find that online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu, and there you can sign up to have it delivered to you once a day or weekly, or you can just go visit the website. You'll be able to see the agricultural economist as well as the crop scientist from the U of I now and their thoughts on the marketing year and the crop season right at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, as we approach the growing season, I thought it might be important to go back through the use of dicamba. Aaron Hager, weed scientist from the U of I, has written an article, posted it both to the Bulletin online and the Farm Doc Daily website. And earlier in the year at the All Day Ag Outlook, he discussed its proper use. I pulled those comments and thought we'd go through it, but let me give you some of what he's written about dicamba first. This is what he would consider a failure for using dicamba for the season. The singular use of dicamba as a post-emergence herbicide. If you only use dicamba on dicamba-resistant soybeans, Aaron Hager would consider that a failure. Here's what the weed scientist would consider a successful use of dicamba this season.
Well, again, I think the goal is going to be the zero weed seed production. Now, how we get to that, What we're encouraging people to do in Illinois is, number one, find the fields that have the best use of the technology. Not every field needs this technology for the weeds that are there. And I defy anybody to tell me that we've got 11 million acres in Illinois that need this technology. That's a misnomer. If you do have that area where you could benefit from this technology, what is your species of concern? If it's predominantly something like mare's tail, this is an excellent burn down herbicide. By far and away, it's more consistent than the Roundup 240 that we used to use. You can solve a lot of issues around burn down, mare's tail burn down with something like dicamba. You can take Extendamax, clear up to a full pound as a burn down for mare's tail. That's an excellent program. If it's something like water hemp, for example, then our recommendation is going to be, number one, you need to select a residual herbicide that's going to target that species. Okay, there's a whole lot of different products in the marketplace that can get very good residual control of something like water hemp. But you got to do this right. You can't skimp on rates anymore. Because what we're going to try to do is get the rate on there that's going to give us the longest residual control that we can. If you want to add dicamba at that time, at that pre-emergence time, go ahead and do it. Why? Well, the simple fact of the matter is dicamba is extremely water-soluble. It's not adsorbed very much on soil colloids. It's going to be available there even under dry conditions. So let's say we got a field planted, dicamba soybeans. We've got our residual herbicide in the tank. We lay that over the top. We add the dicamba in there. We don't get rain for 10 days later. The hope is that because of how soluble the dicamba is, that may last enough. That may carry us through to control any germinating seedlings, because our residual herbicide might not have enough moisture to make it work. Okay? Now what happens if we do the exact same thing? We spray that field on Monday and by Tuesday you get an inch of rain, who cares? The dicamba's gone, but now you've got the rain that you're gonna need to make that residual herbicide work better. Scout those fields about 14 to 21 days after planting. Do not wait 30 days. If you've got something coming up, if you wanna put dicamba in the tank and go do it, go do it. If you want to add another residual in that first post pass, I'm not going to discourage you to do it. If you can get another residual in there, if you get the right moisture conditions, our hope is that that's going to be the last trip you make across the field. If something breaks later on, our recommendation is not late dicamba at all.
That's Aaron Hager, weed scientist from the University of Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org.